Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Today's Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. Now it's time to talk baseball.
And welcome into a Baseball America Podcast with J.J. Cooper and Josh Norris. I'm John Manuel, another podcast brought to you by SeatGeek. We're getting a lot of good response on these podcasts, by the way, so thank you for the downloads. Thank you for subscribing on iTunes.
Thanks for the reviews.
Absolutely, great reviews. We're working to increase our sound, and we're working very hard to improve our reliability, doing it every Monday, every Thursday. So thank you for the positive response to our improvements, and I hope you have a positive response to this podcast, our opening day in the minor leagues podcast.
Yay!
We're very excited about opening day in the minor leagues. JJ and Josh are going to hit the road in a few minutes. We just finished an issue. The issue has every opening day roster in organized baseball in it. And we're going to talk about the ones that piqued our interest the most. No, not the major league rosters. And to paraphrase Axel Foley from Beverly Hills Cop, these aren't just teams. The super teams. So, guys, I think we kind of telegraphed the end of last season, kind of telegraphed what this year's number one super team would be. Even though this super team is... I'm going to compare him to Paul because he's young and precocious. To me, Anderson Espinosa is the Paul to Yoan Moncada, Andrew Benintendi, and Rafael Devers being the other three Beatles. Those four guys were together last year in the South Atlantic League.
End of the regular season.
One start for Anderson Espinosa. He's back in low A, but the rest of those guys, JJ, have moved up to high A. And that means the Salem Red Sox, even without Michael Kopech with his broken hand, even with Javier Guerra having been traded, this is still a loaded roster.
Oh, still a very loaded roster. And you look at this right now and you say, I mean, this is that Greenville club. It's star power.
Yeah, it's star power.
You can look at this different ways. There's different ways you can talk about a super club prospects. We're going to talk probably about some teams that are more deep. They're deeper than this team. But no other team has three top 20 prospects. Moncada is worth, if Yoan Moncada was on a team with no other prospects, it'd be worth making the trip to see Yoan Moncada. If Andrew Benintendi was on a team with no other prospects, it'd be worth it to see Benintendi. Say the same of Rafael Devers. They're all on the same team. If you are going to watch a lineup where you know that 3 to 4 times a night you're going to see Moncada, Devers, Benintendi.
And tonight they're batting 2nd, 4th, and 6th.
So
I think a 2nd, 3rd, and 5th, actually, from what you tweeted out.
I thought Benintendi was in the three hole
with Nick Longhi in the 4 hole. Who's a prospect in himself on the top 30? Nick Longhi, who gets a Mark Carrion comp for me, because I think he has that kind of similar upside, maybe a little bit more, but also because he bats right, throws left, like Mark Carrion.
But so we have Salem, you know, this does stand out. But I want to throw it to you, Josh, as you get ready to head to Durham to see Blake Snell.
Snake Blell, as Josh is calling him. I like that nickname.
Snake Blell, indeed.
You get Blake Snell. I'm headed
versus
to Greensboro. Versus Tim Anderson, which is pretty good. I'm headed to Greensboro, and I get to see Josh Naylor and Ke'Bryan Hayes, which I'm pretty excited about.
That's good.
It's not bad.
Kevin Newman on that?
No, he's on high A because he was there low A at the end of last
low
year.
Low A West Virginia.
It's a little less prospecty than maybe you'd hope for West Virginia, but...
You have to qualify it as low A West Virginia. You don't have a New York Penn League, Sally League inter-squad game.
So we got Salem. That's really good. But is that your favorite team as far as, like, if you had one team you go see? Or who is your team that you would pick out?
I already know Josh is one team I would see. He's going to chase it around all next week in South Carolina, Anderson Espinosa in Greenville. But that's not your super team.
No, it is Salem. they're coming into this area to play... Winston-Salem and then Carolina. Well, when they play Carolina, it's going to get even better because you'll have Moncada, Benintendi, Devers on one side and Dansby Swanson on the other side.
Well, but at the same time, though, you know, that Winston-Salem club's not bad either.
So. Right, it's got Spencer Adams and Jordan Stevens on that club, which are pretty good. But Dansby Swanson somehow already carries that name brand value like a Pepsi.
He kind of is like his own name brand. The thing, again, with... So the star power versus the depth, JJ, that's kind of a classic BA argument when you're ranking prospects. And we kind of get both in Corpus Christi in some ways. Francis Martez, Alex Bregman, Joe Musgrove, David Paulino. I guess it's just kind of hard to imagine that Corpus Christi gets better after having A.J. Reed last year and And this year, I guess the really surprise name there is Alex Bregman. I know he finished last year in full season ball, and he was in Lancaster. But for the number two overall pick from last year's draft to be in Double A already, it's a great sign for Alex Bregman. Right. He's like the anti-Alex Jackson.
I do think that this is like almost prep, because here's, if you look at the Astros right now, the Astros are clearly a contending team.
Yes.
Carlos Correa is pretty good, by the way.
Correct.
You know, I think we all knew that. But if you look at the Astros team and you said, what are the weaknesses? I think the biggest weakness you could argue is okay, let's say, and I do mean this is a nightmare scenario, but if something happened and Carlos Correa is going to miss a month or 2 months, who's the guy to step in and replace him?
You don't like Marwin Gonzalez? Neither do I in that role.
I don't think in that role. I don't think Nolan Fontana in that role. I'm sorry, John. I apologize.
I was about to say, his brother Brian Fontana, very unhappy.
But I do think that part of the reason, Alex Bregman ended the year in high A, but the other part of the reason is that you send him to Double A. If he handles Double A, he is the guy, the shortstop in waiting, that sure, if something happened, he might be the answer.
And we talked about after Swanson got traded last year that there was a case for him to be in Double A this year too. And if
right,
it weren't for Albies, he might be. But they don't want.
I think he'll be quick. I think he'll move there. I don't think we're going to have.
I don't think it will be that quick. I do think they want to get consistent reps at shortstop for both of them instead of having them juggle second and short every day.
Yeah, the separation between the two players, obviously, JJ, you were in camp. You wrote about this. This decision was on the Braves' mind in spring training. You weren't surprised that they put Albies in Double A. I was a little bit surprised. I thought that Swanson would go to Double A just for the same reason that you have Alex Bregman in Double A. I mean, it's hard to hit in the Southeastern Conference. I know that it's not the same as Double A, but the top players in that league can jump pretty quickly to Double A. I wonder if Swanson hadn't been hit in the face by Yoan Lopez, if things would be different.
That's what to me is to tell a guy who's never played a day of full season ball, hey, you're going to Double A. To me, that's asking more of him, even though Albies, I know, is skipping high A. But Albies, I think skipping high A is a little less of a jump, even with the SEC experience.
Ozzie Albies is skipping high A, and he's 19 years old.
Mm-hmm. And he's 5'7".
And he's 5'7" if he wears heels. He's not
5'7". But this is the comparisons. I love the comparisons I heard from Braves officials, been there a long time, for Call without the arm. Now, admittedly, at the time, they thought when they moved for Call through the system at a furious rate.
They thought he was 19.
He wasn't. He stuck with the bit.
He was 22.
He stuck with the bit. I will wear an underage drinking tag rather than tell you that I'm actually 22. But I do think that that's one of the things that they're moving. They feel obviously very confident with Albies that he is able to handle kind of almost whatever they throw at him.
Right.
And it is fascinating to me, though, that you have two guys here, and I really do think that if you pumped them full of sodium pentothal and said, okay, I've got the truth serum in you, now tell me who's going to be your shortstop, I think you get different answers from different guys in that organization right now.
I think that's fair. It's the Baseball America podcast with John, JJ, and Josh. And we want to remind you, if you're trying to get minor league tickets, if you've ever been frustrated buying tickets online, most sites make it complicated, and they try to sneak in changes at checkout. That's why you need SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. And I know if I needed to buy minor league baseball tickets, especially for opening day, now I don't need to buy tickets because I'm John Manuel. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Baseball America, clothed in great power when it comes to minor league baseball tickets. You don't know that reference either.
I'm just looking to see
that's
the cloaked
Lincoln
in great power is
it's
on the script.
It's not in there. But I can get minor league baseball tickets whenever I want. But if I weren't in that position, I would know SeatGeek is the place that I go for tickets to a game or to concerts. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I have used it to look up NCAA tournament tickets. I've used it for concerts. And I know that what SeatGeek does is pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place. What that does is save you time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts, like I just did, for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats.
Green, yellow, red.
That's right, and it's very simple. Even Ice Bear can use it. Before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek shows you the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. And if you listen to this podcast, you can use a Baseball America code to get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter promo code BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. And then when you do that and you save your $20, go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or to iBooks and take that $20 you saved and go buy yourself a digital edition of the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, $19.95, available now for the first time ever as a digital edition. Best read ever.
Yes.
Very excited about that.
Ice Bear likes synergy.
Exactly. Ice Bear, one of the rare things on a super team.
First off, you're I don't think they know I'm Ice Bear, so I'm Ice Bear.
Josh Norris is Ice Bear. You have two AAA teams in the top five here. Not you, but we have two AAA teams. Rochester, Lehigh Valley, fighting it out, duking it out for the IL North. That seems exceptional for the International League. Plus, Indianapolis is on this top 10. Durham didn't make this top 10, but I know Durham's pretty good. When you have guys like Mikey Montuk and Richie Schaefer, who have conquered, in my mind, AAA, at least offensively, and they're back in AAA this year, plus our minor league player of the year, Blake Snell, and Snake Blow.
And you've got Louisville Bats here. That's another IL team.
So four International League teams in the top 10. Upset City.
Yeah, that's...
And that's, hey, as you know me, the
inveterate...
MILB TV watcher, all AAA teams on... You know, so every one of those games is watchable. Yay.
So which do you like, Rochester or Lehigh Valley? I feel like you're partial to the Iron Pigs. You like bacon.
I do like bacon, not as much as former BA staffer and current Indian staffer Clint Longenecker.
Yes.
His love for bacon is unmatched in the human race. I do like Lehigh Valley a lot. I can see an argument for both sides. I mean, Max Kepler really stood out to me last year. He looks like he's going to be a good one. Jose Berrios, I love short right-handers. That's a failing
of mine. By the way, I do. If you're like on Twitter or Instagram, Jose Berrios is the master of the baseball workout video.
Yeah, he is, actually.
It's like, wow, Jose Berrios is really getting after it again today. Jose Berrios gets after it every day. It really is.
It's like he's at a perpetual Cespedes loop, yeah, you know, from a few years ago. But, I mean, to me, the other thing with Rochester is they do have the guys who have some AAA experience, whereas Lehigh Valley is almost a little bit more kind of exciting. Were you surprised to see Andrew Knapp at AAA? I thought maybe it'd be Alfaro.
No, I figured Alfaro was going back to AA just because he spent most of the time last year that he would have been at Reading with healing that foot injury he had. So he would move up, and Andrew Knapp very clearly mastered Reading last year. He had a historic year, a Darren Ruffian year.
They need to put him somewhere where has a little tougher to hit.
But for now, it's going to be really tough to hit for the first 4 days because they have their first four games already canceled.
All four, because
Syracuse is our...
So what you're saying is we could have waited to release this for at least 4 days using the Lehigh Valley corollary.
And they go to Rochester next, so it's not going to get warmer.
Rochester, I know, has already canceled its opening day as well. And I did see... So Rochester's... We've got them ahead now. JJ, if they had J.P. Crawford, who they will probably get sooner than later...
It flips.
It flips pretty easily.
Really what happens here is that you have... The Rochester club has two top 30 prospects. And as great as Lehigh Valley is, I think Lehigh Valley has better overall depth. But you've got one top 50 prospect on Lehigh Valley. You know, again, to me, when impact is a big part of this, because when you've got those truly top-end guys. I mean, when you look at a club like Colorado Springs, okay, there's only two top 100 prospects on that team. That's still pretty good. But Orlando Arcia is one of them. If you got a chance to see Orlando Arcia before he goes to the big leagues, you want to see Orlando Arcia. It is true for that Reading club. If you got a chance to see J.P. Crawford and you haven't seen him, to me, if you are saying, I am in an area where I can drive to see a number, I have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in a lot of places. But if you do, what you're always looking for to me is if you get a chance to see a top 10, top 20 prospect,
do it.
Always do that, because nothing against these other guys. And it's great to have a lineup where you know you're going to have, hey, there's four really interesting guys in the lineup. But the memories that stick with you, is that Carlos Correa, Byron Buxton, you know, Lance McCullers trip, that sticks with me much more than, wow, there's a lot of good prospects on this team.
And before I came to Baseball America, I could have spent that time packing or working or saying goodbye to the people in the Northeast. But I chose to go see one final game at Reading versus New Britain at the time, which was the Twins affiliate. The third baseman in that game were of note. They were Miguel Sano and Michael Franco.
That was Miguel Sano pre-Tommy John surgery, and Michael Franco pre-crazy dreads, but both those guys post having massive raw power.
Unfortunately, that day, it was Miguel Sano during suspension for taking too long on a home run trot.
Soy El Rey.
Yes. I think they said he took like 37 seconds on it.
Tater Trot Tracker will love Miguel Sano.
Yes.
But wait, you remember the trips.
Yeah, you remember the trips, and I, more than I think anybody here remembers, I also like the esoteric sort of stuff about the ballpark, and which is why I...
You love Reading.
I do love Reading. I like a lot of other things we'll talk about later.
I was going to say, that sets it up to say, your ideal matchup, though, let's be honest here, is you're floating in the Lazy River in Frisco, watching Corpus Christi versus Frisco.
Right. there was a question in our chat today that somehow did not have to do with the Braves, about what would your ideal promotion be this year to see? And I said, well, it's the Lazy River in Frisco, which is one of the coolest things I've seen. There's a ton of ballpark with pools.
So what is the Lazy River going to be? You just describe it.
It's just a big
never
pool, but it has
a... Lazy River?
It's not.
No, it's awesome.
It's got like a...
You get to float.
Yeah, you get to float. It'll be in the summer.
And
it'll be
drift
around. There's a tiki bar or something out there. And I said, the only way it could be better is if they put tropical fish in there. And I think that'd be
some koi, maybe some
chlorine angel. May kill the tropical fish, you know, because you kind of need the chlorine for the, especially with people drinking beer in a Lazy River.
That's my thought. My thought would be there would be a lot of shenanigans about, hey, let's give Nemo some PBR and get some fish drunk.
Thanks. Drunk koi, I don't know if that would really work in a Lazy River. I know you were looking for salmon. In the Lazy River.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see salmon in the Lazy River. I always like seeing salmon.
I think that salmon don't like lazy rivers. I think they like rushing rivers.
Actually, that's the next step.
This isn't about them, it's about me.
Someone puts a rushing river in the outfield where it's like,
wait about an hour in the Florida State League and you'll get one.
This could be what could keep a team in Colorado Springs. This is what Josh has been having to work on all week. You mentioned Colorado Springs is going to have prospects. They aren't going to have a team after the 2018 season. And you already have Hartford. You mentioned New Britain. No longer New Britain. They're no more Rock Cats. They're now the Yard Goats.
Officially, they finished their first game today.
So that's right. They already played Richmond. Did they win that game?
Tyler Beattie.
I don't remember if they
won. Tyler Beattie. Yeah, Tyler Beattie gets the win.
This is the amazing thing about the minor leagues. We just don't care who wins. We like the players. We love to watch the
Tyler
players.
Tyler Beattie had a good start,
But they were the home team in Richmond. Richmond was away in its home opener.
It was their home opener. Exactly.
Yes.
that's strange. How strange is it to see a wandering team with this many prospects? You've covered this enough for a while. The Rail Riders that year, when they were still the Empire State Yankees that one year in AAA, they weren't loaded.
No,
as a prospect
I mean they
team,
certainly they certainly wouldn't have made my our top five, top ten super teams.
I'm impressed that the Rockies are sending some significant prospects. David Dahl, Ryan McMahon, Kyle Freeland jumping up even after missing
a
lot of time.
That's the only surprising one, though. It's like a lot of these guys, you don't really have a choice. Like you don't really want to see them the star on the road, but Ryan McMahon, Ryan Tapia, like those guys are really...
They're done with high A.
They're done with high A. They've done enough to high A that you have to move them up, and they're not ready for triple A, so it's like, okay, well... Kyle Freeland is a little different story because there's no part of the 2015 Kyle Freeland season where you go, oh yeah, he checked that off, you know.
Yeah, except for the Fall League. In the Fall League, even there, he didn't pitch great. He competed, he didn't have great stuff, but he got his work in. He was a 6-inning
guy. Getting 20-plus starts is really the most important stat for Kyle Freeland this year is 20-plus starts where you say, I'm not even saying 25, 26, 27. I understand they may shut him down for, like, okay, we're going to skip you this time or whatever. But he needs to stay healthy through this season.
25 starts. You're getting me on one more tangent that we wrap up on. That's how many starts Tyler Colic got last year in Greensboro. You guys both saw him. I never went and got around to seeing Tyler Colic pitch last year in Greensboro.
I didn't miss much, as everyone says.
I missed a lot because he's 6'5", 260, but I didn't miss much in terms of his performance. And JJ, you were off him as a prospect from the first time you saw him. You're just sort of like, I'm not writing him off, but I don't remember you being as down, but you might have been.
I was. I tried to temper it because I don't want to be the guy that comes back from Tyler Colek's first or whatever second start in low class A and just pans him.
I was the one constantly telling you guys he was the number two pick in the draft for a reason. I know, I remember doing it. And say, don't bail on this guy yet. But now he has Tommy John surgery, and first draft ever in 2014 with back-to-back high school pitchers going 1 and 2, and both have had Tommy John surgery already. Kolek won't pitch in 2016. Aiken didn't pitch professionally in 2015. He's still rehabbing. He didn't make an opening day roster. Still rehabbing in Arizona. I mean, JJ, what was your reaction to the Kolek news yesterday?
I mean, sad first. I mean, because we root for players. It is a rough part of the job that you basically see players and you have to then convey the information, you know, that, hey, there's a lot to be concerned about. Tyler Kolek, pre-injury, there's a lot to be concerned about because he had not demonstrated yet that he could get to that velocity consistently on a five-day schedule.
That's right.
They gave him extra rest. You saw it. Regular rest, 5 days, you know, starting every 5 days, you saw flashes.
He might have been good for a Japan schedule, but that was the first
full pro year, but that's a concern. And the best way I can put it is that we've been fortunate enough to have seen Jose Fernandez in Greensboro.
Josh has got the vapors.
And to see Tyler Kolek. And the reality of it is that the difference is when you saw Jose Fernandez...
Who had conditioning questions about him in high school, by the way.
But when you saw Jose Fernandez, right away, this was in April, and you're like, this guy's special.
Yeah.
Wow. That really jumps out. There was no point last year...
That's Greensboro to Greensboro. That's an apples to apples
comp. There's no one that I talked to who saw Green... Not just Maya, but really, more importantly, there's no one I talked to who saw Tyler Kolek last year who said... I'll put it this way. We talk about Michael Kopech, who has his own issues.
Right.
Suspensions, broken hands from fights, all this kind of stuff. That being said, when you talk to people who saw Michael Kopech last year when he was not suspended and healthy,
right,
you saw people would go, wow, there's really something. That jumps off the, you know, he jumps off the mound from the standpoint of this guy's special. No one was saying that about Tyler Kolek last year.
Yeah, I think I was a little lower on Kopech. Just, I mean, the fastball was there. It's really big. But the breaking ball was inconsistent, and the changeup was too.
Although the breaking ball did get better.
Yes, it got better. But it's better than Kolek.
But exactly. You saw more from Kopech than Kolek.
Right.
And you saw more velocity.
Right. And I want to spin it back to Fernandez because that's what I do. I want to opening day memories here. Let's talk about what's the best minor league game each of you guys have seen in person?
For me, I always go back to the 2012 Appy League playoff game. That was so much fun. Starling and $15 million of center fielder. $13 million. Starling and Buxton. I mean, it was a really good game. There were prospects everywhere. It was the freaking Appy League with that kind of prospects. I mean, it was just... That's the first one that comes to mind. I'm sure there are better played games, but a lot of them run together. I mean, you say opening day memories. I do remember, like, 1995 was my first minor league opening day. It was... I don't even remember who the Hickory Crawdads lost to. I know they lost, and I know I interviewed Mark Johnson after the game, former minor league manager of the year, and Mark Johnson had a woman's face painted on his jockstrap. So that's what I remember from that game. I remember all the, especially the Latin American players, rushing out front to see the fireworks display when the game was over. That was my first one. That's what's tattooed in my head. Sharing a beer with Mike Rojas after the game. I'm sure... Mike was happy to know that I was older than 21 at that time, but just barely. But as far as players go, like Carlos Lee was 17 and played in the game. You know, he didn't stand out in the game, but it stood out that he was 17 years old.
I have to think back. It's not the most memorable, but like Andrew Jones, 17-year-old Andrew Jones, that same year you were covering Hickory,
yep.
I was covering the Macon Braves.
We've got the 95 Sally League year on lockdown.
We've got to cover it. Sally League All-Star game, we still talk about it on a regular basis. But Andrew Jones hitting 3 home runs in a game before his 18th birthday in full season ball was like, that was really the day. He was already really good, but that was the day where you go, this guy who was considered a very intriguing prospect before, but Glenn Williams was considered the big money.
$825,000.
Keep an eye on this guy. And then it was like, and by the way, it's Andrew Jones. He's a top 10 guy before he has full season ball under his belt. But he was lower ranked, if I remember right, than Glenn Williams. By that day, by the end of that day, it was like, yeah, Glenn Williams is nice, but Andrew Jones is the guy. The one I always flash back to, though, which I always say this is the dangerous about you're relying on your own eyes. Mike Montgomery, 13 Ks in Kinston.
He's a big leaguer.
He's throwing 95 out of the pen now. Yeah.
Impressive.
But Mike Montgomery was in complete control that night. I mean, again, it's probably not now, I'd say, the best pitching performance I've seen. Jose Fernandez ranks pretty good as far as that. But at the time, I do remember thinking, That and the one other I'd say is Aroldis Chapman coming into a Louisville game and knowing I'd never seen 100 in person, which I know now sounds funny.
Right, quaint.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, I saw 100 tonight. But Aroldis Chapman coming in and having the radar gun and going, I'm going to see it tonight. And it was like 99, 100, 103. And I know you have now.
I saw 104 in the fall league for Ray
I saw
Black.
I saw Ray Black this year, so I saw 103. So,
Those aren't opening day. Those are just most memorable games.
Yeah, I don't have an opening day like that really sticks.
Okay,
that's funny. Said the one more I'll say that were completely random is I remember Steve Hacker, who there are not 12 people not named John Manuel besides Steve who remember, but Steve Hacker.
Hacker begat Jason Hart, who begat Ryan Howard, all at Southwest Missouri State,
exactly.
Became Missouri State.
But Steve Hacker had a stretch for the Macon Braves, and I guess that would have been 97 or 98, I think 98. That was the hottest I've ever seen a hitter. It was the one time I've ever been on a regular basis covering a team every night where he would come to the plate and you would just expect a homer in a key situation, and then he'd hit the homer in the key situation, and everyone would just lose it because it's like you don't see guys. I mean, you don't do that, and that's my completely random, like, great memory. What about you?
Memories.
I'm going to go with Jose. I mean, I saw him with, at the time, current BA staffer Hudson Belinsky and I were both at the same game.
All right.
He was against Lakewood, and you could just see greatness written all. He toyed with those guys like they were little leaguers.
Didn't Jabba have that same effect on you that year?
As in the major leagues, because I never got to see him pitch in the minor leagues.
Okay.
No, he left right before I graduated college.
You're young. I keep forgetting that part. I mean, the most memorable game I've ever seen was not a minor league or college game. It was 2000 Olympics. I mean, that's the one. Not even the Ben Sheets game. It was the game before that. It was all minor leaguers, but it was the U.S.-Korea semifinal game. Roy Oswalt, and then Taehyun Chung, I believe, was a submarine reliever for Korea, who the Orioles tried to sign a couple of years ago, and all that stuff went down with the Orioles in Korea. But that was the one that had the deluge in the bottom of the eighth inning where the home plate umpire kept wiping his face and telling the other umpires, no, we're going to finish this game, and waving the other umpires off to say, no, I'm not calling this game. And the U.S. getting a interference double play at the plate, and I think at the bottom of the eighth to try to take the lead, where Brett Abernathy slid out of the base path and Paul Seiler of USA Baseball took a chair and threw it into the wall, like smashed the wall and his chair. Like, we were in the press box, we hear this giant crash. Turned out later that was Paul. And then in the bottom of the ninth, the U.S., I think it was the ninth inning, where Gookie Dawkins was pinch running. Leadoff hitter gets on, walk or hit, I forget. Gookie gets on base. Minkiewicz, squares to bunt. Pickoff throw to first. Gookie is picked off. Next pitch, Eichhardt goes yard, game winner, puts the U.S. in the gold medal game, which they won on the Ben Sheets complete game. But that was, I'll never see a game better than that game. That was incredible.
I got the Jose Fernandez game, which is still, it's the best game the best performance by a pitching prospect I think I'll ever see. There was a perfect game by Jean-Marc Gomez in 11, I think.
Was he with Akron, I guess?
He was with Akron. It was a day game, and it was I think the
education day game?
It was. I think the Thunder also threw like a two-hitter that day, so that was a really quick game. And there was one earlier that season, well, not that season, but where I went to the morning, I made sure to take off work. I used one of my vacation days to go see Dylan Bundy versus Yordano Ventura.
And this is why we hired Josh.
And then go see a doubleheader that night in Trenton. So I got, I think, 20 innings of a game where I saw, and it's incredible, in the nightcap of that game, it went 15 innings because it's a doubleheader. Because
it was your third game of the day.
And it was awesome because they brought in a position player to pitch, Shane Brown, who was like their seventh outfielder. And he got out of a bases-loaded one-out jam, and then he got the walk-off hit in the bottom of the inning. And he might have had like four hits that year.
That's good times. That's good times.
This is how much we love the minors and all. You ask me, like, and I say all that and all, and then it's like, oh yeah, I was at the Leyritz Homer F of Wohlers. I was covering that game, you know, for my paper. And it's like a crucial World Series game that is still remembered. I'm like,
that's not the first one.
Doesn't rank like with Andrew Jones three homers or anything like that.
I was in outdoor school in sixth grade when that happened. I remember exactly where that
was. Outdoor school, you hippies.
No, I don't know what they did that for. They made us
Because it's Oregon.
They made us go for night game. How did you?
They made us stay outside for a weekend. Like,
oh, okay. As I said that, because that was definitely a night game. It was chilly in Fulton County.
I remember one of my siblings came back, and she so reviled that outdoor school that she said, "I didn't use the restroom all weekend. I waited until I was home."
That's can't top that one, yeah, exactly.
Say, we're out. Peace out.
We've been sitting here trying to top each other's memories. Can't top that one.
Great stuff, wins. Bear.
Great stuff, JJ. I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. And here is Dave Slade with more.
This concludes our program. Visit BaseballAmerica.com for more podcasts. Today's Baseball America podcast was sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20.